What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Father Sean Carroll, the executive director of the Kino Border Initiative. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Passover is almost here, beginning this Friday night at sundown. It's the great Jewish Festival of Freedom, actually the paradigmatic festival of freedom for the whole world. Very likely it's our oldest holiday and in some ways our most important. Pesach's officially also the single best observed Jewish festival of the year, edging out Hanukkah. Nearly three-quarters of all American Jews will attend a Passover Seder of some kind this coming Friday night. And within this Seder, there are many lovely interpretations that express freedom in prayer, story, ritual, food, and song. Passover is both the most Jewish of holidays and the most universal. It's Jewish because, more than any other annual event in our people's life, it focuses on the two most important elements in Judaism, food and education. The Seder is ritual food turned into profound pedagogy through the Haggadah, but it is also the complex joy of joining extended family and friends at a meal in which every part plays a critical role. What could be more Jewish than finding meaning about freedom in each bite of food, every sip of wine, teaching through food? Nothing is quite that Jewish. While most of the menu and the main symbols and structure of the Passover experience remain the same, after all, Seder means order, similar from year to year, the actual ways we explore each of the elements of the Haggadah, the telling of the Passover story, are very much open to interpretation, addition, and reflection. Just as my wife Wendy typically tries to cook a new dish each year, so too I introduce a few new elements into my own family's Seder every year, and at the communal Seder we will celebrate at Temple Emmanuel on the second night as well. While most people remember the delicious food best, the truth is that what makes a Seder special is the mix of insight and personal involvement of the guests. What they remember about Passover growing up, for example, their most memorable Pesach, or what freedom means to them today. It is these personal experiences that make a Seder special. And of course, good music at the Seder really helps. One of the consistent highlights of our unique Too Jewish blend of entertainment, education, controversy, humor, and news, our Jewish radio charoset, if you will, a mix of delectable elements that's so much more than the sum of its various excellent parts, has always been Jewish music of any and all kinds, and it's important to have some humor. To play us in this morning, we have a completely ridiculous version of the Passover story as told by the hilarious Sean Altman. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. Please don't learn your version of the liberation of the Jews from this very funny pastiche of Jewish mishistory.
We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. The year was 1492. Hitler had just invaded Poland. Madonna just become a Jew. Moses was found on the Potomac. Then he marched with Martin Luther King. He came back to free us from our bondage, 'cause S&M has never been our thing. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So they chase us to the border, there's a parting of the water. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. And the Pharaoh, who looked like Yul Brynner, heard the Jews were trying to escape. Charlton Heston came right down from the mountain. He said, Pharaoh, you're a damn dirty ape. The menorah was almost out of oil. Farrakhan was planning Kristallnacht. The gefilte was nearing extinction. It looked like Moses and his flock were verkocht. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
Egyptian plagues, blood, locusts, boils, dandruff, acne, bacne, piles, cataracts, sciatica, sickle cell anemia.
We fled on foot, there was no time to tarry. Leavening the bread would take too long. All we had was egg foo young and matzah while battling the fearsome Viet Cong.
I'm Korean.
They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So we never did succumb to the annual pogrom. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So come on, blow the shofar, cause they haven't nailed us so far. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
That was Sean Altman's They Tried to Kill Us, We Survived, Let's Eat for Passover. Kind of. Coming up fast. The first Seder is Friday night, April 22nd, and our Temple Emmanuel Community Seders are Saturday night, April 23rd, this week. Call 520-327-4501 to make reservations for this fabulous night, celebrating freedom. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Father Sean Carroll, knows all about freedom. He's the executive director of the Kino Border Initiative, which works on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border to alleviate suffering and help those in distress. Find out his views on immigration and freedom and refugees when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Father Sean Carroll is executive director of the Kino Border Initiative, which works to make the border a more humane place in this election year. That may go against some of the prevailing sentiment out there. He has been participating in this really important initiative and came to it in a complicated way. First of all, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rabbi. Really good to be with you.
Great to have you. Tell us how you ended up in this job.
Well, I was part of the needs assessment that investigated the possibility of beginning this work. So I'm a Jesuit priest, and our province, southwestern U.S., was interested in reflecting on a possible response to the reality of migration. And in 2006 in particular, the issue was very contentious and continues to be. I mean, here in the Arizona-Sonora region, and also many migrants were dying in this area, and we wondered if we could help in some way. And so we partnered with another Jesuit organization, Jesuit Refugee Service USA, and for a year and a half, we met with a variety of people asking two questions. What are the greatest needs, and do you think we can help? And the KBI emerged based on the pattern of responses that we heard, which was to begin a bi-national work and to focus on humanitarian assistance, education, and research and advocacy. And then much to my surprise, in that process, I was asked to actually work on this project. And I said no initially. I'm not the model of obedience. But in the end, it was clear to me God was calling me here, as was the Society of Jesus. And so now I've been here over 7 years now, and it's been an incredibly blessed experience and a challenging one as well.
I would think both. It's always a mistake to be on a planning organization, because then you end up being in charge of it. I've noticed that myself. As a Jew, as a rabbi, I certainly understand the imperative to help the stranger, to assist the immigrant. explain a little bit about the Catholic thinking on this.
Well, part of it for Catholics is rooted in scripture as well. I mean, just the human person made in God's image and likeness, which gives us certain rights and responsibilities, and just in scripture over and over again, the call to welcome the stranger, the widow, the orphan, but the stranger in particular in our context. But also at the same time, in the Catholic tradition and in light of scripture, also recognizing that people have a right to a dignified life in their place of origin, and that if they, it's not possible for them to have access to that life, they have the right to migrate to a place where they can live with dignity. And so we see that and recognize that, and also see God's suffering in the people that we serve, that God present in them. And so I think all those are motivating factors for us in our work. And I think we're significant parts of the decision to come here and to establish this binational migrant work.
We will talk much more about the Keno Border Initiative with Father Sean Carroll when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Rabbi.
Quitting smoking, big part of your lives.
Yeah, it's very important. When we started this company just over 6 years ago, it was because I had a really bad cigar habit, and it was time for me to quit. We have 7 children. Our youngest just turned 8, and I wish to be around to watch them all grow up and have successful careers and family of their own.
And Pamela, it's better personally, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. I'm a non-smoker, and being with a person who smokes cigars in particular, it's much nicer. It doesn't, his body doesn't reek of it, his hair does not reek of it, his clothes do not smell of it, and there's no tobacco between his teeth anymore.
And you don't have to send them for extra showers or out in the rain.
No extra showers.
How can people find out more about Freedom Smoke?
You can look us up on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-705-7013. That's 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Thank
Rabbi.
You.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We have less than 7 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. Ted Cruz asked American Jews to back him for his outspoken support of Israel, but he also acknowledged differences with the Jewish constituency on social issues and immigration. I recognize that's a question many people here wrestle with, he said last week at the Republican Jewish Coalition's annual leadership meeting in Las Vegas. One of the attendees earned applause for saying that Ted Cruz's attitudes on abortion and gay marriage were very unpopular with Jewish Republicans. But Cruz, the Texas senator running for the Republican presidential election, said he would not abandon his social conservatism. No Republican has ever won without campaigning and running as a fiscal conservative, a national security conservative, and a social conservative, Cruz said. Cruz was the only one of the 3 remaining presidential candidates to attend the Republican Jewish Coalition gathering. He is seeking support from Jews in his bid to keep frontrunner Donald Trump from accruing enough delegates to win on the first round of voting at the Republican convention. Cruz believes he can win a second round of voting at the convention. Republican Jewish fundraisers and activists have, for the most part, been skeptical of Trump and Cruz, with all but one of the candidates they favored having dropped out. They have to make a choice. The one who remains, John Kasich, the Ohio governor, is not seen as likely to win the nomination. Cruz tried to assuage concerns about his social conservatism, saying he believed issues like gay marriage and abortion should be left to the states. He also suggested he would not seek to impose his own views as president. Federalism answers a great many issues. It allows for a diversity of views, Cruz said. Nobody wants to elect a hectoring scold. I am not here to be pastor-in-chief, but commander-in-chief. His hard line and illegal immigration control shared by Trump has stoked concerns among establishment Republicans, particularly in the business community. Cruz said that the wealthier Republicans need to acknowledge the strong feelings the issue stoked among blue-collar voters who believe they are losing jobs to undocumented migrants. "You want to understand the rage," Cruz said to the Republican Jewish Coalition. And that was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Last week, we started to talk about the rise of strong right-wing, far-right parties and movements in Europe in response to three factors. You talked about the new immigration pressure from the refugees coming from the various civil wars, especially Syria, but not exclusively, the lower birth rate among Europeans in general who are not recent immigrants. That's not a surprise in developing countries, or developed countries rather. Let's talk about some of the other pieces that go into all of this.
And there was also the slower recovery from the global economic crisis.
Oh, right, the economic challenges, right.
And I think one thing that was striking to me, at least on a recent trip to Europe, is how many Europeans, whether they love America or hate us or are indifferent, are dumbfounded by the phenomenon of Donald Trump. It's like, what's happening in your country? Is your country becoming a neo-Nazi country? Is your country going crazy? I mean, they are literally dumbstruck and incomprehending in spite of what's happening in their own countries.
There's a few Americans who are also dumbstruck by the phenomenon. If you go back a year and you look at the predictions, nobody predicted this.
Well, that I don't know. But, I mean, Europeans are really puzzled and perplexed by the Donald Trump phenomenon. But in the European backyard, let's start with the huge refugee crisis. I mean, this is going on a scale that's really unprecedented in Europe and has accelerated over the past year, because once refugee routes were open for Syrian refugees who were more or less bona fide political refugees fleeing for their lives, other people from neighboring countries took advantage of the same routes, and unscrupulous smugglers and traffickers in human beings made a lot of money smuggling Iraqis, Lebanese, Afghans, Pakistanis, Libyans, whoever, into Europe. And Europe has, in spite of its theoretical common foreign and security policy, very different national policies on what to do with refugees. And Germany was the most welcoming and ultimately also the most attractive for many of these refugees in terms of how they saw their economic potential and their potential future for their families. So Germany has finally cut a deal with Turkey to basically take back many refugees and for billions of euros to either resettle them in Turkey or to build refugee camps or provide some kind of temporary solution, which will not be a long-term solution. Turks don't particularly like Arabs, and just because they're fellow Muslims doesn't mean that Turkey wants to have a couple of million Arab citizens. So this is a short-term solution, but it's interesting to compare and contrast the treatment of minorities on the continent with the treatment of minorities in the UK, and also to consider that dynamic as one of the possible explanations for the very real possibility, if not a likelihood, it may not be a probability, but it's definitely a possibility that the UK will decide in an election in June to leave the European Union, which kind of leaves the European Union high and dry. So we should probably look at that question in particular next week.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
I look forward to it.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome back the return of our randomly recurring Haikus for Jews. Back for Pesach this time. Lacking fins or tail, the gefilte fish swims with great difficulty. And on Passover, we opened the door for Elijah. Now our cat is gone. That was the Passover version of our Haikus for Jews. Zen Judaism for you. A little enlightenment. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Boker Tov.
Boker Or. Pesach is coming up fast.
Yes.
There are four wonderful archetypes that we use in the Passover Seder. Chacham, Rasha, Tam, Sheinu Yodei Lishol. They used to be called the four sons. We now call them the four children.
Right, right. The four humans.
The four humans.
They kind of represent all of us.
They represent all of us, and Passover is the great educational experience in many ways. Mm. Tell us about the wise child and how it is that we ought to address our educational process for the wisest, most, I guess, challenging students
sure.
in some ways.
You know, what's exciting about thinking about diversity in children is that Jews have been pondering about this and talking about this and learning about this for eons, hundreds of years, thousands of years. And so that's a neat element of our inheritance culturally. The wise child, the smart child, the bright child, as parents, we all want to think this about our children. And of course, the reality is that there's a mix of capacity out there with
How
kids.
How can you say that? All Jewish children are brilliant.
Of course they are. And each child presents their own opportunities, challenges, abilities for learning, interests, skills. So when we see children who have a higher level intellect and quote unquote, the smart kids, even though all kids have capacity to be smart. There are lots of ways to specially reach children who are ready for more challenges. Things as simple as asking higher level thinking questions in the classroom, stretching their engagement and the projects that they do, tailor making classes that are designed for high level thinkers, engaging them in advanced problem solving, project based learning, like designing a city, doing enrichment with these kinds of kids. Lots and lots of great opportunities. And when we look at a traditional approach to study, there's an exciting opportunity here as well to really build a deep language base, the capacity to translate from Hebrew to English, to really wrestle with and challenge the ethical questions, Jewish law, both ancient and modern. Very exciting kids to have in schools.
You know, I often think that it's the ones who are the brightest that make us be the best, turn us into the best teachers, that compel us to reach a higher level in our work.
They definitely provide a certain level of challenge that is unique to their needs. But that's also true with the other three kids that we'll talk about in future segments.
And so we will. Chag Sameach v'kasher, a good and a healthy Aziz and Pesach.
Thank you. Cheers. Chag Sameach. Enjoy the matzah, everybody.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service in our special pre-Pesach edition. During one of my trips to London, I became friends with a very wealthy but very modest Jewish chap named Hyman Goldfarb. On a visit, Hyman told me that because of his huge donations to charities in Britain through the years, the Queen wanted to knight him, but he was going to have to turn it down. "That's a big honor," I said. "Why would you turn it down?" "Because during the ceremony, you must say something in Latin," Hyman said, "and I don't know a word of Latin." "Ah, say something in Hebrew," I suggested. "The Queen won't know the difference." "Brilliant," Hy complimented me, "but what should I say?" "You know, remember that question the son asked the father on the first night of Pesach? Can you say that in Hebrew?" "Well, of course," he said. "Manishtana halayla hazeh." "Thank you, old sport. I shall become a knight indeed." At the ceremony, Hyman waited his turn while several of the other honorees went before the queen, had a sword rested on their shoulders, spoke some Latin, and were knighted. Finally, they called his name, Hyman Goldfarb. Hyman knelt before Her Majesty. She placed the sword on his shoulders, one then the other, and motioned for Hyman to speak. Out came, "Manishtana halayla hazeh." The queen turned to her consort and said, "Why is this knight different from all other knights?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. This coming Friday night is Pesach, and all the nights thereafter. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Achrei Mot near the midpoint of the book of Leviticus, Vayikra. Leviticus is centered on the question of how we create holiness in our lives, and Achrei Mot addresses the issue in a variety of ways. It begins with words that are poignant without being revealing. After the death of Aaron's two sons, referring to Nadav and Avihu, the two young priests who died in the Torah portion of Shmini, after offering strange and inappropriate fire to the Lord, Aaron is enjoined to be cautious and scrupulous in all of his observances, lest he incur a similar punishment. Our portion then moves to the rituals related to the great and powerful Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, holiest day of the entire year for our ancestors, as it remains for us. We are commanded to afflict our souls that day, initem et nafshotechem. The rites described in Achrei Mot are quite detailed and form the basis for the ways in which our ancestors observed the Day of Atonement throughout the period when the temple stood in Jerusalem. The high priest purified himself completely, then offered sacrifices of atonement for himself, his family, and his people. Then he would purify the holiest parts of the shrine of the temple and bring forward a goat as an atonement offering. That goat is one of the peculiarities of this ritual sequence. Actually, two goats are brought out. One, the scapegoat. This portion is the origin of the concept and term of scapegoat. One is given the burden of symbolically carrying the sins of the people into the wilderness. The second is sacrificed as an atonement offering on the altar. Ultimately, after a day of self-denial and repentance, Ki vayom hazeh yechaper aleichem letaher etchem b'chol chatotechem, on that day atonement will be made for you to purify you from all your sins. Through this process, we are restored to holiness. Much of the rest of Achrei Mot reflects the ways in which we fail to remain holy, however, and establishes rules to try to keep us on the straight and narrow. We are not to practice idolatry or engage in blood sports or eat carrion and so on. Each prohibition is another way of structuring holiness into our daily lives or keeping us from engaging in unholy behavior. Finally, Achremot is interested in the question of establishing the prohibited degrees of marriage, the people with whom we are not permitted to enter matrimony, the laws of consanguinity and moral respect for those who are most closely related to us. In essence, the emphasis throughout the portion is on the ways in which we reestablish a close relationship with God and so reacquire holiness. In a world today in which our focus is often far from holiness, so shaped by the daily details of life and the clacks and call of commercial society, this emphasis on the sacred is striking. In the words of the psalm, keep yourself from evil, strive to do what is good and right, and seek holiness every day. Outstanding principles to live by today. In preparation for Passover, our Jewish Poetry Slam this morning is on the most elemental part of the Pesach Seder, the often overlooked bowl of salt water, Marge Piercy's poem on that theme. It is a bowl of tears on the table into which we dip the parsley, into which we dip the egg. It's a miniature ocean on the table, salt as the sea of reeds through which they were to pass. Not to safety, never safety, but to where they were promised they would, if they chose, be free. It is the salt water of our sweat pressed through our skin as the body labors, for we are bidden not only to rest on the seventh day, but to work on the others. And the brain, too, in its fever of creation, exudes salt like the sea, salt like our blood, salt like the waters of the womb, the salt of regret and the salt of effort. Marge Piercy's poem for the Seder table called Saltwater. First Seder is this Friday night. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Father Sean Carroll, will explain how the Kino Border Initiative began and discuss our policies on immigrants and family reunification across the Mexican border when we return shortly here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel is the only country with a high credit rating to have seen a consistent decline in its debt burden, credit ratings agency Moody's said last week. noting Israel's unexpectedly low deficit of 2.15% in 2015 and the resultant 1.8 percentage point decline in Israel's debt burden to 65% or so. Moody's says the country's fiscal performance is improving beyond expectations. Among our 71 investment-grade sovereigns, Israel is one of only two countries to register a declining debt burden every consecutive year since 2009, and the only one rated A3 or higher, Moody's said. Israel's credit rating is A1 with a stable outlook. Pretty darned impressive. Proving that fact is often stranger than fiction, former Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi requested help from Israel amid the revolt against him 5 years ago, it was reported last week. A third-party country sent a messenger to Jerusalem to request diplomatic support for Tripoli. In the message relayed from Gaddafi when he was battling an attempted coup, Israel was warned that the rebel forces uprising against Gaddafi's four-decade rule could topple the regime and pose a threat to the whole of Europe as well as Libya. The North African nation plunged into chaos after rebels ousted Gaddafi in 2011, backed by British and French airstrikes supported by the U.S. On Gaddafi's behalf, the messenger cited in the report asked that Israel urge the U.S. and France to take efforts to rein in military action. According to the report, Israel quickly assessed the situation and decided against intervening. A few months later, in October 2011, Gaddafi's government was toppled and the deposed leader captured and killed by rebels. Since 2014, Libya has had two rival governments, one based in the eastern city of Beda and the other in the capital, Tripoli. Islamist terrorists, some of whom have sworn allegiance to ISIS, have taken advantage of the political chaos and expanded their influence in Libya since Gaddafi's fall. And in yet more unbelievable yet true news, Palestinians launched a worldwide campaign last week to nominate jailed Fatah leader Marwan Barghouti for the Nobel Peace Prize, despite his life imprisonment for five terrorist murders he has engendered and committed. The campaign is sponsored by the Palestinian Commission for Prisoners, the Palestinian Prisoners Club, and members of the Palestinian Legislative Council. The campaign will include organizing rallies and marches throughout the West Bank and Gaza Strip in support of the nomination. Organizers said they are planning a massive campaign in the local and international media to promote the idea of giving Barghouti the Nobel Peace Prize. Mind you, Barghouti has been a leader of no less than three terrorist organizations that have planned and completed mass murder, including the Tanzim Militia and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. The Peace Prize, huh? And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Father Sean Carroll is head of the Kino Border Initiative, which works to make the border a more humanitarian place, working on both sides of the border, United States and Mexico. Sean, you're a Jesuit. You went to Stanford. Bright guy. Did you ever think you'd be here in the desert helping people stay alive?
Never imagined I would be here. Well, nothing against it. It just never entered my consciousness. And yeah, I think when you become a Jesuit and you take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, certainly obedience, it can lead you to surprising places. And I think, as we know, we have a God of surprises. And I have found in my experience that when I allow God to surprise me, that it's an incredibly graced experience. And it's most likely that God is behind and in whatever I'm doing. that when it's my agenda or it's something that I'm controlling or manipulating or when I'm motivated by different factors that perhaps are not of God, then God can work, but it's just more more of a challenge maybe. But this was really a surprise for me, and I felt truly invited by God to be here and to work in this particular project. And I'd never been director of an organization, never led a parish. I'd worked in parishes, but never led one myself. And yet here I was, and beginning this binational work focused on three areas and all that entailed. But I think God helped me a lot and had good advice from different people. And I think it would have been hard to find a worse time to begin a new initiative, because this was around 2008 and with the economic crisis. I mean, just from that standpoint, one could say, well, how could you possibly think of beginning a work of this nature? And you know, we trusted our discernment. I mean, because I think when we were looking at beginning this work and really trying to get a sense of what was needed and what would it look like, that we were asking a deeper question. So it wasn't just about me, but I think we, the various groups, were asking, well, God, are you inviting us here? And it became clear that God was. And so I think that has served as a touchstone over the years, especially when the challenging moments and experiences come, because the inclination is to run away. and yet I think we return to our call. We return to that invitation.
You have that Jonah moment.
Yes.
You want to flee to Tarshish. Like, really, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. and yet that has really served as a touchstone. And I think that has carried us here. And I have thought many times over these years that, well, God, you invited us here. We have to do our part. But it's your invitation. Then you need to make this happen, and you need to bless it. And God's done both. And I see it time and time again.
So tell us about the work itself. You focus on humanitarian issues. There are many of us who've tried to work to prevent deaths in the desert, people crossing in a variety of different ways. Tell us a little bit about the specifics of the humanitarian work.
So we have two main projects in Mexico. One is a module outreach center. Last year, we served almost 43,000 meals there, mostly to deportees. We provide clothing, pastoral support, and other organizations offer services that really complement what we do. We complement each other, which is wonderful. So, for example, the Mexican consulate will help migrants recover belongings that were not returned when they were released from detention. They'll help with bus fare so migrants can return to their town of origin, and they'll help them locate family members who are still in detention in the U.S. No More Deaths will help with phone calls. Another organization called Santo Toribio Romo will help migrants cash checks. And the reason that's important is because when some migrants are released from detention, their money is given back to them in the form of a check, a U.S. check, which in Mexico is worthless. And so that organization will give them cash for their check and then deposit the check in the U.S. And that's important as well because when migrants don't receive their belongings when they're released from detention or are given their money back in the form of a check, that increases their vulnerability when they're deported. And so and it disrespects their human dignity. And so that's why those issues and others are important to us. We also have a shelter for women and children. And there, it's really a safe space where the women have their basic humanitarian needs met for food, shelter. They're able to call their families. But also it's a space where the women, in a good way, really take ownership of the space. And it becomes home for them. And one of the sisters on our staff has formed a cooperative in which these women make bracelets and earrings and they sell them to visiting groups and the women, when they leave, have some money in their pocket, which not only is helpful for them for whatever's next, but also just the activity of making these items is therapeutic for them because many of them have been through major trauma in the immigration experience that they've had. But we also work in education. We hosted 63 what we call immersion groups last year from high schools, universities, parishes. And these are experiences of direct service with the migrants we serve, dialogue with them and other people who are involved in this reality in some way, and then their own reflection. And our staff has been really good also at following up with these groups afterwards, so that they can reflect on how to put into practice the fruit of their reflection and what they've taken away from this experience. And we help them think about it in terms of a model of share, accompany, and defend. So share, how do you tell the story? Whether it's on social media, whether it's with your family, whether it's with your fellow classmates, accompany, how can you volunteer in some way in the place where you live that somehow helps migrants and helps provide a positive response to this reality in some way. And then defend is the whole advocacy part. And we've had participants in immersion experiences make phone calls and on certain pieces of legislation, and they've done lobby visits, and so these educational experiences just don't stop with the people who come, but really lead to something more, and really helps them engage. It helps engage them on this issue. And then we have a research and advocacy component. And so we work in advocacy on both sides of the border. In Mexico, we're really trying to work so that migrants have more access to justice. And we're also trying to address abuses committed by Mexican police. And then on the U.S. side of the border, we've been very concerned about Border Patrol abuses, about short-term detention conditions, about ending nighttime deportations, about creating the conditions so that more people fleeing violence have access to asylum in the U.S. And the good news is that there are other organizations who are concerned about these issues as well, both here locally and in Washington. And so we've developed some very fruitful partnerships and have become part of some great networks that are trying to address these issues of concern.
Two really interesting pieces right now. I know the economics are such that actually migration between the United States and Mexico has reversed, and there's a net migration south to Mexico from the United States, partly from economic reasons that may not include people coming up from Honduras or Guatemala, but it is a really interesting difference from 2008. When you started this project. And the other is the current political climate and some of the stuff we've seen in the recent campaigns. Can you comment on sort of how the Kino Border Initiative, how the church would respond to these kinds of issues?
So we're serving less migrants than we were in 2008 and 2009, yet the number continues to be significant and the need continues to be great. And so I think that's a reason why we're still there. At the same time, in this current election climate, I think part of what goes on, I'm not saying this explains the whole reality, but I think a number of people who are either running for office or maybe have concerns or even anti-immigrant, I wonder if they have met migrants. And it's not to say that every migrant's perfect. I mean, we're all human. And yet, at the same time, what we have found in our work is that when groups come to the border and they meet the people that we serve and they hear their stories, their experience, why they've migrated, why they can't come legally, what they've suffered, that has an enormous impact on them. And I think it's because they no longer think about this issue strictly from a theoretical standpoint, but also now they think about it based on this person that they met. They think about it in the context of Juanita, of Julio, of Pablo, and that changes it. It's I think it's one of our great strengths is our ability to make visible in appropriate ways the humanity of the people that we serve. And I think if that could happen more in helpful ways, then I wonder if that would really change the current tone of our political discourse.
Would be a gift if it did. As you mentioned earlier, you know, each human being is created but Selam Elohim in the image of God, we're taught in Genesis. These are human beings. There's a fine line for some people in violating law, even in humanitarian cause, and not doing so. How can I say this? Straddle that fence to carry out the metaphor?
The law is important, and obviously that provides order in our society, and I think that's valued highly, certainly, I'd say, in U.S. society and U.S. culture. At the same time, what's very clear is that our current immigration system and current immigration laws, not all, but a number of them, don't work, are broken, don't respect certainly the human dignity of migrants seeking to come for a better life, and so these and don't meet the interests of the U.S. as well. So, for example, and I think this still holds. A number of years ago, there was an immigration advocate who testified before a congressional committee, and one point he made was that in areas of non-skilled work in the U.S. At that time, might have been 2008, there were 400,000 people estimated kind of working in those areas, migrants, undocumented, I assume. The U.S. was granting 5,000 visas for that category. And it's an important example, I think, that shows...
Sorry to laugh. I mean, in a way, it's not funny, but it's, you know, such a pittance.
I mean, and so it's just an example that shows that the system is broken. As Cardinal Roger Mahoney, former Catholic Archbishop of Los Angeles, said, he said, I think there are two signs at the border, you know, something like keep out and help wanted, you know. So
it's great.
It's at the same time, and so I think, you know, how do we reform immigration law and our system? Well, I think part of it is really, certainly from a political standpoint, trying to address the what we call push factors that cause migration. So economic need, family separation, and violence. And obviously the U.S. can't do it all, but I think the more policies that address those push factors well, the more likely we're going to come up with an effective and humane solution to this issue.
I sometimes wonder where people think their own families came from. I remember an evangelical preacher at my synagogue saying, we all came here in different boats. We're just in the same boat now. In the work that you do, you work on both sides of the border. You work with Border Patrol, you work with Federales, you work with the other Mexican mm-hmm. police, because it's a lot of different divisions of Mexican authorities, as I recall. Do you ever find yourself in a funny position?
In what sense?
When you're trying to alleviate suffering or help people who've been deported, sometimes they're identified by official organizations as, you know, they've obviously violated the law, they've broken... they've done things they weren't supposed to do. You're trying to help them. How do you navigate that process?
Sure. Well, I think our mission's clear. You know, we believe in it, and I think we can explain well why we do what we do. I think the immigration law question's a good one. I think of Archbishop John Wester, who's Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he made a point years ago that, you know, there's this assumption that the law works all the time, that it is effective, that it is humane, and so with that mindset, the tendency is to blame the migrant, right? The migrant's the problem, and yet a point he tried to make was that no, it's not so much a question of the migrants breaking the law, it's rather that the law is breaking them, and so, I think that's what's happening, and I think he frames it well, and I think he helps us place the focus where it needs to be, which is, well, how do we reform the law so that it works well, so that it works for the U.S., so that it works for sending countries, so that there is order. Not talking about open borders, but we are talking about reforming our law so that people who want to come and work in areas of need in the U.S. can do that, that they can be paid a just wage, that they can find the dignified life that they're seeking. And what we see and have found over the years is that it's an enormous benefit to the United States in a number of ways, economically, socially, culturally, and frankly, it's a fundamental part of the identity of the United States. Not everyone agrees with that, but it's certainly what I think is integral to the identity of this country.
I would certainly agree, and you know, I think it's great work that you're doing. It's complicated work, and unfortunately, I think it'll have to keep going on for a long time. May it come to a better fruition and some changes that we could all like to see soon. I want to thank Father Sean Carroll for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about the Keno Border Initiative?
We have a website, www.kenoborderinitiative, all together, all lowercase, .org. And there's information there on our website about what we do, recent news items that involve the Keno Border Initiative. If people are interested in supporting us either through in-kind donations or financial support as well, they can they can provide that support through our website.
And can people come and see some of the facilities?
They can, and there would just be a question of contacting us,
coordinating it, and making sure it was an appropriate
trip. Coordinating so that because we do cross the border with the people who come in, so just being sure that everyone has a passport and that we're the size of the group, and that works within our schedule as well, because we host a number of different groups, and that way we can make sure that it's a good day to bring a group across.
Having done it on a variety of different occasions, I can tell you it's a powerful and really transformative experience. Thank you so much, Sean.
Thank you, Rabbi. Great to be with you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here this morning with me on Two Jewish, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Two Jewish. Our guest will be Tracy Salkowitz, Executive Director of the Jewish Community Foundation, talking about legacy giving today. Our playout this morning comes from Yehoram Gaon, his version of the Ladino text of Who Knows One, sung near the end of the Pesach Seder this Friday and Saturday. My friends, may you have a Chag Pesach Sameach V'Kasher, a Zis and Pesach, a happy and kosher Passover, starting this Friday night. A good Yontif and a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week we pray of peace.
Ken supiense y entendiense alabar al Dio criense, qualo es el uno, qualo es el uno, uno es el Creador.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.